You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This is Notes from a Native Daughter, and I am Sol Danela, and I am here today with the band members of Balloon, and also the esteemed Lawson White, who is our host, and he hooked me up with great equipment here, so I am super happy. Thank you so much.
Of course, I'm happy to. My pleasure.
Okay. So, Lawson, I am actually going to start with you.
Great.
I read your bio, and you come from the legendary land of Nashville.
Yeah.
And you also say that you feel super incredibly comfortable in any environment of music. I guess I share some of that life experience with you, and we don't have to get into it, but tell us a little bit about Nashville for the people that don't know you.
Yeah.
Oh, he's the sound engineer, I should, you know, for the people that are listening, for Balloon's new album, which we will talk about after we talk to Lawson.
And our producer as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, album producer.
Yeah, from Nashville, grew up there, Music City, USA, they call it. Son of a country music drummer and songwriter who had a, you know, great career in country music in the 60s and 70s. But then after he came off the road, he was a partner in a studio and focused on writing and making demos for those songs to pitch to artists to cover. So that was kind of the world I grew up in. You know, I knew I wanted to be in the studio from a really early age, and love songs. And I think that's kind of why I do what I do. To, you know, the idea of like crafting a great, the art form of the pop song to me is one of the most interesting things in music. Like 2.5 to 5 minute short, super compact, you know, couple of verses, a chorus, and a bridge is just, I think, an amazing art form. And then what has been done with it continues to be one of the biggest challenges that I face to make that work, to make that really come to life and be exciting and compelling. So working with composers or songwriters has been something that I've gravitated towards since I've been working in music. As a performer, commissioning composers, and then now as a producer, working with composers and songwriters. So yeah, that's why this project is an incredible opportunity for me, because it's, you know, I've worked with Angelica as a composer previous to working with the band Balloon, and then I performed with the band, so got to know the music as a performer, which is really my, you know, instinct, and, you know, and truest self, I guess, in a way. And then I've just gotten to know the guys really well and their music from a lot of different sides. So now to come at it as an outside, you know, collaborator, with the kind of, I get to be focused on the big picture view for what these guys do so well already and have been doing on their own so well for a lot of years. And the most beautiful thing about it for me is that they're completely, you know, together and driven and incredible composers and performers, so they don't, in a way, they don't need any help. And that's when a producer artist team is really its best, I think, if there's a lot of trust, which there really has been here. So you can go into it and be totally vulnerable and open to each other's ideas and trust that you're going to do something different than each of you would have done on your own, and, you know, putting the music first always to get it to just be its best self. And so that's back to my roots too, just like working on the song and letting it tell you what it wants to do. And so it's been, you know, several months of digging into this music, and I think it's become like way more than any of us knew it could be.
Mm-hmm.
It's why I do this, you know? Mm-hmm.
That's so cool. But you're also a percussionist. How did you get into that?
So same thing, dad. Kind of had no choice. Grew up with the father drummer. That's, you know, had sticks in my hand as long as I can remember. And in Nashville, it's a funny thing because you either were in a band or, you know, if you went to like, if you studied music, the stuff that was close to me were classical opportunities. Blair School of Music at Vanderbilt was the good one. And so as you, you know, got better at things, you found the good teachers, and that's when my teacher was the timpanist of the symphony. And so I didn't come up with a classical music background at all. My parents, deeply music, you know, a very musical family, professional musicians, but not in classical music. So that was a new thing. Anyway, long story short, just fell in love with it through studying it. Went to the pre-college at Blair, and then went to Eastman for undergrad. I thought I was going to be in an orchestra. For a long time, my resume said principal percussionist in a major symphony orchestra was like my objective. Then I went back to Nashville, did some demos, and got in the recording thing thinking I would be like a session musician, and it just wasn't what I thought it was. It was more like, you know, handyman, sort of utilitarian guy. Wasn't like, it was the same disappointment. I mean, I so much respect for both worlds, percussion, orchestral world and this session player, but like for me, and maybe just on my path and my experience, it wasn't as creative as I wanted to be. I found you were working for somebody else's vision. In the orchestra, you're in the back just trying to execute it. It was pretty technical, mm-hmm. even when it was a musical experience. And then studio is kind of the same thing. Just, you know, people wanting you to, you know, somehow be a part of their vision. And I wanted to make the arrangements and be involved creatively and work with, you know, on that side of it. So I went to grad school because my duo partner at the time, Jason Truding, tell you more about him in a second, but he was at Yale already, and I went, had some lessons with the teacher there, and he was just incredible for me. So went to study for grad school there. And that was a super chamber music heavy place. Two great things, chamber music and composers. They were both incredible studios, really excellent studios, and the percussion studios, excellent. So we all, you know, we were doing work together. The percussionists were commissioning the composers constantly, and this group, so percussion formed. So I found myself way far away from country music roots, playing chamber music at Yale. You know? Yeah. But then I still kept gravitating to recording and creativity in the studio, and using the studio as an instrument was really something that I became like totally in love with the idea of at that point, and was recording these groups that I was in, but wanted to do more with classical music than I was seeing being done, which was pretty documentary recording. Excellent audiophile recording, but, you know, great composer, write the piece, somebody puts up a couple of microphones in a great room with great instruments, and you record it, and that's what we're getting. But it's always kind of a drag, because we, you know, all of us, my peers, were listening to Bjork and Radiohead and Wilco and other great artists, you know, current artists that were doing really cool things in the studio. Plus, you know, Prince and Michael Jackson, Stevie Wonder, and all these other guys that have done amazing things. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, but we were working in classical music, but then when it came time to record the pieces, it's like none of that was getting addressed, which bummed me out. And a lot of everybody else started, you know, like, yeah, so we feel that way too. So we started, you know, not doing that, like using the studio as an instrument to record classical music. And not that it was the first time that had been done, certainly, but it hadn't been done much, actually, to that degree. And it was possible because composers like Angelica, who were, you know, also were fascinated by that same music and wanted to make records that had that same impact and that same excitement and used those sounds. But, you know, while writing a score and crafting a piece for a chamber group, maybe. So anyway, that's when I came to New York, that was my sort of mission. Was to record these groups with that in mind, and it's just led to this incredible community, like Balloon, mm-hmm. of people that, you know, you can talk deeply about pop music, electronic music, rock music, you know, country music from both places, Puerto Rico and Tennessee, and then also, you know, Stravinsky and Bartok and Beethoven, and nerd out about how much we love all those things. So that's I think that's the thing that makes me love this, again, love this project, and just feel blessed to get to work with these guys and do what we're doing. I think we're all in the same boat, but it's that, you know, that perfect mix of things.
And how did you find Angelica, or how did Angelica find you?
I remember. Do you remember? So I was working on a group, producing a record for a group called Janus. Great flute, harp, and viola trio, like a Debussy trio. And they had commissioned an album's worth of music. Basically, I think there were a couple pieces that were not brand new. And Helga had written a piece that they were recording. And so I just fell in love with that piece. And then got to know her through, I think, trying to get some splits for some electronic tracks that, you know, that we needed, and hit it off. And I told her how much I loved her music. And then we got to know each other a little bit after that. I think a year later, I, you know, probably coerced you to come in to talk about Good Child.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. I was like, I love your music. You have a publishing company. Let's work together.
And I'm like, what's a publisher?
Right? So that was, I kind of left this out. Am I talking too much?
No.
Okay, we can edit me and as much as you want.
But, I feel like the whole podcast should be like Lawson.
Just fascinated.
Go on, we
have to. It's all about you guys, really, actually. It's my whole story, like, connected to these people.
Well, there's a lot of synergy with your development or trajectory as a musician with Angelica, so I understand why you would... it makes sense why you all like each other.
We found, like, shortly after me shifting gears from performing full time to producing full time, I was in this group, Soap Percussion, and another group, Alarmal Sound, both of which I still really love, and it was a hard call to have to stop performing, but they were getting really busy and they were out of town.
Both of which I'm super big fan of, and like the two main groups that I really loved when I moved to New York were those two.
So we knew about them living in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
So it was like an extremely big coincidence that we got to meet the people behind those groups when we moved here.
Yeah, big influences in...
Like Alarmal Sound, I didn't know that Lawson produced that first record that I heard where they were doing covers of Aphex Twin. And I immediately remember, like, when I listened to that, I was like, oh man, Angelica has to listen to this. This is acoustic players performing super complicated electronic music. And then... in while we were talking about that record, you were like, yeah, I recorded it.
Yeah.
And I recorded some parts of it.
Yeah.
And I recorded percussion. And I'm like, what? And we're working with Lawson.
I love meeting idols.
Yeah.
It
can be good.
That it was just so sincere, because it wasn't like... It's even better than that version, because it's not like they looked up who the producer was and they called that guy.
And emailed you and got a response. Yeah.
We are already already in, you know, working with each other, and then realize these things. And so it just makes sense looking back that we should be together. But
well, I should say actually that there's several people here. I said before, the members of Balloon, but I want to ID who these members are. Raul Raimundi, Angelica Negron, Jose Olivares, y Noralis Ruiz. And they are poets, they are artists, they're musicians, Puerto Riqueños, todos. And I'm very proud of that. And each of them is really incredibly accomplished individually. I mean, some of the stuff that you guys do, and you will get into it, because it all makes Balloon happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does it not?
Yeah.
And the name of the album is going to be the working title again?
Prisma Tropical. But it sounds like that will be it. Yes. I can't think of a better name, so...
Yeah.
I guess we're going with that one, but
we say working title just because we haven't sat down and have the conversation of like, oh, what's going to be the album title? But I think it's
Prisma Tropical.
Summarizes
Prisma Tropical.
Yeah, everything so well that it will be hard to find another better one. Yeah.
So why don't you go, Angelica, and tell us about yourself a little bit? Y como, you know, how do you come to Balloon? Because I know you say like, oh, it started in Puerto Rico, but like, why?
It's funny because we were just, this week we had kind of like a I don't want to say an assignment, but one of those fun assignments of
a reflection,
yeah. of just tracing our history in Balloon, and so all these things we were, the band with the four of us were writing them down, which, I mean, we think about these things, but writing them down makes them kind of, I don't know, seem very far away for a reason. That's my experience. I grew up as a violinist, and I started playing piano and then violin because I wanted to play the cello, and they told me my hands were too small for the cello, so they gave me a violin, and I was a violinist for my whole life. And then I was studying in the conservatory and loved music, but never felt quite comfortable in the, I don't want to say in the classical world, but like in the performer world. I just didn't have the interest in becoming a concert violinist. But I was very puzzled because I loved music, but I didn't know what that meant for me at that time, because I had no idea that you could write music. So I grew up playing in orchestras, and playing in orchestras in the conservatory, also in orchestras in hotels during the weekends, and playing a lot of popular music from Latin America. And then I was in this band that was like a string quintet and voice called Sinestesia. And in that band, there was a viola player that he was not really great at viola, mm-hmm. but he was an amazing composer, and he was one of like three or four people that were in the composition department that I had no idea existed. So we became good friends. I talked to him about how miserable I was studying violin, and he was just like, oh, why don't you're writing all this music for this band, because it was pop music, but I was writing it down because the instrumentation asked for it, because it was a string quintet. So he was like, you're writing all this music, why don't you like use that as a portfolio to study composition? So I did that. I was in my third year of violin study, so it's kind of like one of those, like, why are you doing that? Why don't you finish violin? I was like, so I got a minor in violin, and then before that I was like taking harp lessons, cello, and just learning other instruments. Because I realized that I was learning about them not because I wanted to be a great performer in them, but I was curious about
the process of them.
The process of them, and how to write for them, and they're just plain sound. Like,
yeah,
I was just curious about different sounds. So yeah, I studied composition, and was for most of my life was writing music on paper that had nothing to do with what was happening in my other life with Balloon, because Balloon started in the early 2000s. And so after this band, that was the string quintet, Sinestesia dissolved, well, kind of like overlapped both of them. Balloon started, I met, because I was studying in the University of Puerto Rico too, film, and I met Jose there, because I was in another band. We kind of bonded over our love for electronic music, and we started writing music for Balloon, and writing a lot of music for the short films that we were making, which were really crappy films. but the music we got really into, and yeah, I just kept writing music for ensembles and orchestras and solo instruments, and then playing with Balloon, and then I was really like just obsessed with like Russian composers, Stravinsky, Shostakovich. So a lot of my music had that influence, and I felt connected to the music I was writing, but there was something missing always. I always felt like, oh, this is kind of like, this is great, but it's not 100% me. This is like me imitating this cool composers that did this like 150 years ago. So yeah, I moved here with Jose for graduate studies at NYU, and actually that piece that Lawson was talking about that he recorded, mm-hmm. was the first piece that I wrote that I felt like that I was just like, okay, I wrote the piece, and I didn't have to show it to any composition teacher, so I just wrote it for myself, and I was stuck writing it and just like struggling a lot, but it was during a school break. So, and I remember I wrote the piece in like 2 days before the deadline, and I rewrote it so many times, and when I finally got to what it just came so easy, and I was just like, I'm just gonna write something as if it were for Arturo en el Barco, which is my ambient side project, or Balloon, and then it just happened, like, kind of like magically, and I was like, why am I not doing this for all of my music?
That's so great. That's beautiful.
And then from that moment on, that's what I've been doing. And it's not, I don't think of it like, oh, now I'm like putting a pop edge on my classical music. It's just, I'm just being true to who I am. And it's all kind of one thing. And it's, for me, all the more rich because it's genuine. And I'm not trying to imitate something I like.
And about the name itself, Balloon, mm-hmm. I find it so beautiful with the accent on the U. Is it Balloon, like the balloon? Balloon?
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
Like, what is it?
So, Jose and I were studying film, and we like both loved The Red Balloon.
Yeah, I love that movie. I thought about that. I was like, no, what is it?
So, yeah, it's rooted on The Red Balloon.
That's so great. I can see it. Yeah. I hear it, too.
It also, like, we had to turn it into that B-A-L-U-N, because we had, like, balloon as the English word balloon, and then we added, like, some characters on the end to make it, like, more, like, late 90s, like, nerdy, cool internet, you know?
And it was very confusing, actually.
Super confusing. And then there was, like, another band in Germany called Balloon. And I was like, I don't want to change the name. Let's just write it like you would say it in Spanish.
In Spanish, Balloon.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I love it.
Oh, thank you.
And now there's Robert Balloon.
And then now there's, like, that's like an actual last name. So we've met through the internet while searching for Balloon. There's like a Robert Balloon. He lives in New York. And there's like a horror filmmaker called Chaz Balloon.
Okay.
I don't know if he's alive or not, but he's also like shows up in our searches when we do Balloon without the accent. But then Balloon is also an electrical component, which I'm not going to waste our time going into the details.
Balance. That's all you need to know.
It's like an adapter.
Well, that's all I know.
Yeah. You've seen it.
That's what I always thought it was. I mean, I looked it up like way back in the day, and I was like, oh, it's that.
Makes sense.
Depending on the audience, like, yes. We cater to everyone. Horror fans.
Yeah, but the real origins are in that short film.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And so what about you within Balloon? How do you participate? What do you do it?
So Balloon is just like, it was like an extension of something that I always wanted to do since I was like in high school. I always like listened to music. My dad exposed me to a lot of music from all over the world. And I really got into like electronic music as a teenager. Mm-hmm. I got tired of like rock music. And I just wanted to learn how these people made their music. And I realized that most of these people, they did their music by themselves in their home using computers and, you know, electronic gear. And that's what I wanted to do, because I spent a lot of time on the internet as a kid. I had a computer at home. I had like a little keyboard. So I was doing that. But then like I also started playing drums in high school. So I was trying to learn electronic music playing drums. And then when I got to college, I finally found like a group of people that were kind of like into the same music that I was. It was really hard to do that while in high school. So the second year of college, I met Nora in a Spanish class, right? It was a Spanish class. So I had I love The Cure. That's like one of my favorite bands. And I had a patch of The Cure on my backpack. And I remember when I bought it on eBay, it said something like, make a silent statement about your favorite band. And I remember that has never left me. So Nora, actually, we started a conversation because she asked me about the patch.
Yeah, I noticed the patch.
She noticed the patch.
I didn't know that.
We started talking about that, and that Nora liked Depeche Mode, and I was like, I like Depeche Mode. So you invited me.
You and your patch. Well, that's how we started talking.
Yeah, that's called peacocking.
Wow, do you still have that?
It's called
Peacocking.
Still
have that backpack in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
So Nora invited me to play with this other band, and they were kind of like forming, and they were kind of like figuring out what they wanted to do. And I was like, well, they want to do electronic music too. This is my chance to actually buy electronic gear and like really learn how to do it. So I started in that band. It was a very interesting band because it has like kind of like a spiritual precursor espiritual for Balloon, because it was like a band that it was Nora and another musician called Andres Fontanes, that he also played in Balloon for a long time, and they were trying to do folk music within like an electronic lens, and also like more of like a independent kind of like rock scene kind of thing. So I went in that band, I bought gear, I took my parents loaned me the money, and I got a job at the Centro Investigación VIH SIDA on the university, and I started playing that. So it was a cool band, it was like a full band. I played drums, we did a bunch of, we spent 2 years in the band. It was a lot of fun. I met a lot, most of the people from the Puerto Rican scene, I met them through that band.
From the music scene you're talking about. Yeah.
From the Puerto Rican music scene. This is like 2000, 2001, and it was a lot of fun. But at the same time, I always wanted to keep doing like electronic music on the side by myself. And there were like some songs that didn't really fit the format of the band, which was called Oscilador Cuatro. So that's when Angelica came in the picture, because I wanted to develop those songs. And Angelica and I had been taking classes together for like 3 semesters already, and I really liked Angelica. So
and
I was kind of
remixed Anesthesia.
And I remixed
Anesthesia. That
was your Anesthesia.
Entry point.
I was like,
ha ha ha! I have these remixes.
And you and Sandy came for like what was it? Like a tutorial beat.
You made
making.
Your move right there.
Wow. Yeah. So
a tutorial of Fruity Loops.
Of making beats. So that's how, like, that's my role in Balloon. Like, always wanted
getting
to
the ladies.
Getting the ladies. Because I
getting the attention.
I mean, I secretly like always like as a teenager, like, I didn't stop listening to rock music, but I always liked bands where it was like girl bands and they had like a female, like a male drummer. And I always wanted to be that male drummer in a girl band. So,
well done.
Yes.
yeah, we have been 14 years. What happened?
But in Balloon, so it kind of like started with my songs, my ideas for songs, and then Angelica and I worked on it together, and then that collaboration, you know, kept going, and Helig and I are, you know, we became a couple, and we got married years later, and here we are.
How long have you been together?
We turned 10 years.
Congratulations.
Married
this 14 year.
Years
14 years together, yeah.
That's beautiful.
So, nice. Yeah, that's kind of like...
Well,
in a band
life is not easy.
And so my role in Balloon has pretty much kept the same. I've been, up until now, I've been the one that does like the electronic production, all the beats, all the recording, all the production. And because we are like an independent band, I was really into like using the internet as like a promotion tool. So ever since we started out, we make kind of like a visual identity for Balloon to distinguish ourselves from other bands. I was always like looking at bands from all over the world and seeing what they were doing. So the website, I made a website, like all those things. It was like Angelica and I handling burning CDRs. Like that's how we would sell our music in Puerto Rico. And we all did that stuff all together. So it's very, very like independent. And now like after years of doing production and kind of like taking their instrumentation and making it fit within my vision, I was like, I think it's time for me to work with another person. So for the new record,
that's kind of funny.
Yeah, you get up to a point where you're like, I've used all my tricks, I don't know what else to do. So with Lawson, I've been kind of like, here you go, take it, do whatever you want, and then I'll come back at the end and then we'll work together. So, and that has been amazing, because these guys by themselves, without me, they're capable of doing a lot of really cool stuff that I wouldn't even think of because I'm still in my, I came in one day and Raul was recording guitar and they were like in their zone. And I was like, Raul, why don't you try this thing? And then it was like, it wasn't working. And I was like, this is why I'm not here, because we needed to try something new. We needed someone to guide us through that process.
So. That's so humble of you.
I'm 35, so now I can kind of like fall into that role. But
it's also about you know what you know, and you know your limits. And I think that's actually it's so brave. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
So you can also look at that another way, which is say it's really confident.
Yeah.
Because I think.
Yeah, exactly.
When you make music as.
You stand.
As strong as Jose does. Like, his beats are incredible. His tracks are amazing. It's, like, such a part of the DNA of the group. Mm-hmm. And when you recognize that you know who you are, then you're ready to be in a relationship.
Yeah.
And it's when you can get to that place that you can just do amazing things.
But with what you said in the beginning, too, like, I don't think that this would have happened with another person. It's the trust thing that we have.
Yeah, I was thinking that, too.
So we know we're in good hands, because Balloon has so many different elements that a person could take it, like, into a completely different direction and might not be what we're looking for. So it takes someone that we really trust for us to be like, okay.
It's very easy for us to go with someone and be someone who wants to be really helpful, you know, and help the band, and then come back with something that we're like, oh no, mm-hmm. I guess we're going back to our bedroom and recording ourselves and doing everything, because it's really, really, really hard. We haven't had that situation before, but we've been like, years ago, like, we would work with other record labels, and there was one label that wanted to do something with us, and they were suggesting like people that they wanted Balloon to work with, and I was like, no, you're completely missing the point. And those are the moments where we retreat back into kind of like our own.
Because, for example, like, there was like, she plays, Angelica plays violin, so like, these groups that are like cool classical music, and we're like, oh, not.
Like, no, they're like the complete opposite of Balloon.
And nothing against that, but it's just Balloon. Like, not what we're like into, so.
But Lawson has that. Lawson came from that world that we were exploring, and we didn't know that until we started, you know, this relationship with him.
Well, and I think also, I mean, to share in the common ground, like, when you grow up around music, it sort of, you become a little bit expansive, you know, because you understand, you see it from so many different angles. I mean, at least that happened to me, you know, from being in the studios and the sets, and seeing the graphic people developing art, like, it just, you kind of expand a bit, you know, without realizing it, because it's just, you know, you're a sponge when you're a kid.
Right.
Yeah. And for me, that's a very valid point, because I'm not classically trained.
Right.
I've never studied music, but I've been surrounded by musicians.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I've been sort of like following that multidisciplinary kind of like path, and being surrounded by like artists in different formats and different mediums. So it all informs what we're doing. Which is great.
I have to retrace, because then now I realize, and I didn't know this, that you know Noralis also from before. So do you bring Noralis into Balloon, or because you guys are all kind of family connected, right?
Yeah. So it's interesting because Balloon, like, all right, I've been playing with the same people for 15 years. Raul is like the new musician in town, but we know Raul from Puerto Rico. So Nora came into Balloon because after the initial days of Balloon, we expanded into a trio and we brought Andres to play guitar. We changed our sound and became more, instead of like fully electronic, it was like electroacoustic. And that's when Angelica brought out the accordion, and that's kind of like the initial days of the current Balloon. And when we released our first album, we went to record with Ariel Zavala, which is Nora's husband.
Mm.
And he recorded our album, and we kind of like brought him to play with us bass. And he played with us for like a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day he couldn't play because he had work. And we're like, why don't we bring Nora to play? And oh, then
I don't remember that.
Me either. That was a good memory, yeah.
Yeah,
that's a memory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Second choice.
Well, we also like Nora. Well, Nora
and then
we're
like, bye, Ariel. Yeah, they were like,
it's fine.
Lost the gig.
Yeah, I mean, we all stayed
like,
in touch. Yeah. I mean, we all stayed in touch because
we kicked him out. Yeah. To put Nora in.
But no, Noralis is you're a guitarist.
No, I play the bass.
The bass,
y el cuatro. Y el tiple,
cuatro,
yeah.
Tiple.
So, but I think that in the initial
electric bass.
Electric bass. And when I started playing with them, I also played the tiple from the very first.
Yeah, yeah, from the get-go.
Because Andres, the other funny side of the story is that I met Andres years ago. Because we used to play cuatro at the Orquesta Jíbara Francisco López Cruz. We both studied the cuatro in San Juan.
Better translate that.
And,
I have no idea.
and so we played in this folk music ensemble. And I started in that ensemble when I was like 13. And Andres was already like, I think he was in high school,
24.
or he was like starting college, but he was like the cool guy with the blue hair playing cuatro.
He had like the los cornitos.
Yeah, yeah.
He was the Café Tacuba guy.
So he was like the rebel of the cuatro.
Yes,
and I like this guy. So then we started like sharing a lot of music, and he was my best friend. So then we started Oscilar Cuatro with Jose. So we had this relationship. We feel like a comuna for a long time.
Yeah.
For a long time. Yeah. So you've known each other for a long time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And we play in different instrumentation and different format. I've been drummer for Nora. I've been keyboard player for Nora. Nora, I mean, it's crazy.
And Nora just got her PhD.
Yes.
I have to celebrate that.
Thank you.
Ma'am.
Thank you.
And you're
almost
done?
Sure.
Getting there.
I'm writing
my dissertation.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah. So I finished last December. It was a great accomplishment, and it was a lot of work. And
the title of your dissertation?
Oh, Continuity and Change in the Puerto Rican Cuatro Tradition.
Eso.
Yes. So it's all about the cuatro. That.
Are you gonna publish it?
I'm working now on publishing some chapters. Mm-hmm. As
like
articles, but I'm already like, oh, I want to revise this and that. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
hopefully one day I will publish something. It was very interesting because, I mean, when I started that research, I was already living here, and living here, I realized the importance of cuatro players in the U.S. for the development of a cuatro tradition in Puerto Rico. Mm. And that's a fact that in Puerto Rico is ignored. Mm. Like, we have such a strong nationalism for the cuatro that it's like, no, it's just island-centric. The cuatro is from the island. But then when I started my research, I'm like, well, the first recordings of the cuatro were produced in New York, and you have Los Jardineros playing cuatro since the 1927, and very early recordings. So that was for me like a revelation. Wow, the cuatro was in the diaspora, and I was living here, so it was like a special occasion for me to realize that, because I was also living stateside. So yeah, that's a story of the dissertation.
That's amazing. That's so cool.
And then I get to know a lot of great cuatro players mm-hmm. that are active in the U.S. and
sure.
they're a real inspiration for me. Yeah.
So did you start playing the cuatro when you were little? I'm looking at you and she just looked like a little girl.
I started playing the cuatro when I was 8 years old, and it was a similar story, like Angelica was saying about her hands, because I wanted to play the cuatro after I saw Mazo Rivera playing the cuatro in a Super Sábado show in Puerto Rico. So I saw that guy playing, and he was just a performer. He used to play cuatros of all sizes. So I remember watching that, the guy playing a giant cuatro, and then he ended up playing a Roberto Clemente bat with strings.
Wow.
And I'm like, Mom, I want to play the cuatro. I want to be like that guy. It was so cool for me to see that. And so my mom took me to this cuatro teacher in Puerto Rico, and we went with my brother. And the guy was like, no, but your hands are very small for the cuatro, but you, my brother, you can become a student like today. I have openings here. Yeah, just come. So my brother started playing the cuatro, and I was so jealous. I'm like, but I was the one. I was the one with the idea. Yeah, wow. I wanted to play the cuatro, and this guy's like, I don't want to teach this little girl. I'm gonna teach the boy. And then, so my brother started playing, and I like used to watch him, and I was listening to him, and I kept insisting, like, I wanna learn. So my mom took me to San Juan, at the Institute of Puerto Rican Culture. They have this special cuatro program, and there they had just classes for adults at the time. And the guy said, well, yeah, it's cuatro lessons for adults, but yeah, you can come, you're all welcome to join us. And I was there learning cuatro with a bunch of old guys.
How old were you at that point?
I was 8.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Wow.
And yeah, but it was...
And the rest is history.
Yeah, the rest is history. And then I met Andres, and I think that the cuatro has a special connection because of the cuatro, I was able to meet Andres and play with the skies, and I was also able to bring that folk aspect into the band.
Right. That's awesome. And now you, Raul. What is this album about?
This album.
No.
Hard question.
I don't think I'm qualified because I'm the newest.
You're the rookie.
Member. Yeah, what? I think it's a combination of many things. To me, speaking for myself, it just like symbolizes like. So I basically learned how to play music and in bands because of the punk scene in Puerto Rico, and to me, obviously, punk symbolizes doing whatever you want. So to me, this is an extension of that, of being like, you know what? Everybody plays punk music, and people expect me to keep playing punk or rock and roll or jazz because that's what I did in college. But I'm gonna play with my friends, and we're gonna play like electronic indie pop, or you know, and I don't care what people think. So to me, that's an extension of that, but it's so much more than that, obviously. And then you know, these guys can speak to that, but yeah.
And what are you playing?
I play the guitar.
The guitar.
Yeah, and I think this is like a way for me to learn, and also I feel kind of confident enough to know what I can bring to the group. So I'm like learning a lot because these are obviously very accomplished people that know a lot about music, and I also feel like I know about the music that I like. So it's like, okay, so I'm bringing something I know it's different, and I know that if I hear something, I listen to a track, Jose has an idea or Angelica has an idea, I'll hear it and I know already what I can bring to the table. And I'm almost certain. I can say that I feel confident enough to be like, okay, this is going to be good. I know they're going to like this. Mm-hmm. So it's very rare to find that kind of chemistry with a group of people. After playing with so many people, I can tell you that, like, sometimes you feel very confident and accomplished about coming up with something, and then you bring it to the table, and people are like, oh, no, you know.
You suck.
Or they don't necessarily judge you by those kinds of things, and maybe like how fast you can play, or like how good you look on stage, or so I don't know. This is like a very laid back kind of vibe, and just feels natural. It doesn't feel like there's really like a pressure to like impress us or really other people. So it's like it really comes from like the heart. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah. So what's cool about having Raul in the band is that he comes from a whole different scene, and even though Balloon wasn't like a big part of that scene, we kind of like we lived around it, because Puerto Rico is so small that if you played in the underground scene, you will do shows with punk bands.
Yeah, so we not only lived around, we were part of it, because it was a whole community.
And it's awesome because Raul, we always would see Raul there, and now like having Raul in our band, like someone who like back in those days no one would have thought that could have happened, and then coming to the band with his experience and his ideas, and kind of like it, that's pretty cool. Like we're learning a lot from Raul, like even about, you know, like his style, he's very clear about what he does, and it has also given me, because I like to be very hands-on / micromanage, kind of like push me back out of that role, and Raul has been pretty clear about the things that he likes, and it's cool to see him develop those ideas in our music without having to intervene a lot. And I like one guitar effect called chorus a lot, which I
this was gonna come up.
I put up everywhere, and I remember Raul telling me, "I don't like that effect. That's too much." And I taught myself how to have a guitar player in Balloon that doesn't use that effect. So it's cool. It's cool.
And how long have you been a guitarist?
I started playing when I was there was a guitar in my house. I know my mom played, but it was one of those things that like I was afraid to touch. You know, you see a guitar, you don't understand how it works, so as a kid you like avoid it. And then I really wanted to be a drummer, but it was too loud and it was too expensive, so my parents, they were like, okay, no, pick something else. You need a hobby, but so pick something else. And it was like, okay, a guitar, I can probably find one like under $100, so I can ask for that for my birthday. So my mom took me to a shop and she got me this little like classical guitar, and I started playing at the conservatory. And because she was like really adamant about, okay, we're gonna do it like right, you know. But I you know, I was like not really feeling it. I kept getting kicked out of classes because I was just like getting into trouble and stuff. So I don't know, I think, and I ironically I ended up studying music. It was like always that battle of like I need to learn these tools so I can pick what I really want to use, but I also don't want to put up with it. So that's why I always gravitated towards like punk music and like people just picking up an instrument and like making noise. And you know, the Ramones didn't know how to play, but they make these like super awesome records, and so that's what I was into. But okay, so how can I like make this marry, you know, marry these two like very different ideas of like academia and like not giving a fuck, you know. So but and it's still like hard to figure out, but anyways, yeah, I played, and I wasn't very good obviously, and people at school made fun of me because I wasn't good, so that to me was like a challenge. And then I started practicing like 6 hours a day, like just getting back from school and just like literally not doing anything but listen to music and like learn like what people were doing and like why they were doing it and like why they were playing the notes that they were playing and how those notes like related to the chords and like the lyrics and even the lyrics, yeah, everything, just like it's important. And I ended up deciding to study jazz in college, and that's kind of like where I got the real like knowledge of like the history of like folk music. And Nora was actually my music history teacher. And she recognized me. She's like, wow, you play in that punk band, right? And I was like, oh yeah. Like very embarrassed. Like,
but I was very young. Clarify.
But yeah, so like we all were aware of each other, and I was like good friends with Jose's younger brother because he also like was part of like the punk and the hardcore punk scene. So there was like always like some it just we gravitated towards each other eventually. Yeah. You know, that's how it is.
We even played a show together, remember, at Abby's Driving? There was Raul played.
Oh, with the other band, Ardillas.
With Ardillas, and Balloon played, and yeah. Play.
Yeah,
I remember.
It was like a 50s style diner.
Yeah, I remember.
Johnny Rockets.
That's. Yeah. I remember that show. We played. On that show, we played one song that we never played again. Angelica hated that song.
Wait.
Do you remember that song? There might be a demo somewhere. But you were like, I don't like this song.
I think I remember the sound of it.
Yeah.
But the punks were dancing to Balloon. I remember this.
Yeah, well, when Balloon came out, there was like a big kind of like, there was a bunch of kids from the punk scene that were going to Balloon shows because Balloon at the beginning, it wasn't like it was right now. It was like Helic and I, two toy keyboards, one CD player, making like really fast kind of like music.
But also fast. There was like a lot of influence from video game music. So I think the video game thing like was kind of what brought people from different scenes. Yeah.
And I felt so old.
Yeah.
During those shows.
This is after Pac-Man.
Yeah.
But we were like super influenced by those by the music in those games too. So it's like that was a common thread. And so there was even I remember a show at Don Pablo, was it? There was like a mosh pit.
Yes.
And like you crowd surfed. I was playing with Jose, and then I looked to the side and I was like, where's Jose? I was like, oh, he's crowd surfing.
Yeah. That was an epic Balloon summer because the thing with Balloon is that we were like, oh, we wanna play, we wanna reach to a lot of people. So we did shows every month. We would play shows every month, a metal show, a pop rock show, a punk show, an indie show. It didn't matter. We were kind of like that odd band in the lineup. And a lot of people liked it, you know? So we weren't like, no estábamos como que ahí siendo selectivos, or no. Everyone can listen to it.
I think looking back on that, like being in part of the punk scene and like playing shows with Balloon and like seeing them and going to shows where they were playing, it was like that mutual sort of respect because they were like DIY obviously, and it was like them playing their music, and it was like, we don't care if you're like into heavy metal, you know, like. And I personally, before I even got to punk music, I was like a big Bjork fan. Mm-hmm. Like during the Huracan George, that's all I listened to. So that to me was like, oh shit, there's people that are making music that's like, you know, like this is happening, like, because we didn't have like streaming services, no blogs. It was like, mm-hmm. You're just like, oh wow, okay, this is a thing.
Well, distribution was so much better in a way.
It was so different, you know.
It's a whole,
yeah.
It's not a connected, threaded conversation I can have right now, but I have a feeling that there's a disconnect between the distribution then and the distribution now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Back then it was like one store where you could go and find some kind of good music, and then the shows. But other than that, like, I can't, like, Napster, like, downloading services were somewhat a thing, but like, I don't remember even having a computer until like way later in high school. Mm-hmm. So just people like Epic discover time. Music like that. You just like, going to a show.
Yeah, yeah.
Surprising also the Columbia House CDs.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. We would do.
We were trading all the time.
Yeah.
And I will open up like fake names.
Yes.
To get more CDs for 1 cent.
Nice.
And they realized the gig was up when they tried to. They had me try. They wanted me to pay for like a system of a down CD, and I was like, "That's not me. That's not me." And that's how it ended. But it was fun.
So Balloon, Balloon and Prisma Tropical is issued under your label?
That's right. Good Child Music.
Yep. And it's Good Child Music and Good Child Studios.
Yep.
One thing and the same?
Yeah. Yep, that's right. It's been, we started as a publishing company, and I, at the same time I had a studio. And at that time I was really keeping things separate, intentionally. And as now the years have gone by, and this is really, it's really coming into focus as a brand, mm-hmm. and as a community,
yeah.
and what it is about now is exactly this. It's, you know, people making stuff in this studio, and then we put it out, are also responsible.
Right.
And, you know, with the same care and passion that we make the music, we want to be the ones together to tell the world about it. Yeah.
Well, I will certainly tell the world about it. You are podcast 8 of Notes from a Native Daughter. Thank you so much for your time.
All right.
So very cool. And I guess, you know, we'll put a song to end.
Yes.
Totally. Yeah.
Rolling credits.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, that's amazing to hear. That's like, it's like, I mean, if you think about it, it's like a dream band. It's like a producer's dream band in a way. Like if you could take each of these people, you know, composer who knows, you know, loves all the music that you know and has written tons of concert music, and you know, studied Bjork and Meredith Monk and loved that music forever. Total music junkies, made tracks since he was a kid, and like knows every genre and subgenre and subgenre and subgenre and can talk about that.
Shazam Olivares.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Musicologist who like can shred on these instruments and also like knows roots music on the bass. It's incredible. And then like guitar player, jazz and or punk, rock, jazz, in that order. It's like, it's really like you plucked these people and said, I'm going to put an all-star team together. But then it's also got that thing of like the Swampers had, or these great like studio things. Like they grew up drinking the same water and you know what I mean? Going to the same shows and hanging out at the same parks and whatever, like from the time, there's something about that that changes you, that, you know what I mean? They're like calibrated people in a way that historically has made for really great bands, but you don't usually get those two things, you know, coinciding at once. Mm-hmm. And then, you know,
to have it
maid of honor, husband and wife, like there's just all the stuff that's so deep, and I think, you know, so the whole record is just about letting those things shine. I mean, that was the thing about everybody coming in one at a time. It's so funny, we had it so like planned out, and we spent tons of time planning before we got going. It's sort of to the surprise of all of us, and the first idea was that we were going to be, you know, all in here together making stuff from the beginning, and then it wasn't like making sense. It felt like, I don't know, we weren't starting like out of the gates like it wanted. So then we came in, you know, it was like, let's have just people come in one at a time, also because of, it was a shift, intentional shift from that dynamic, which has always been the way they've always done things, you know, with the intentional breaking of the dynamics that existed before, to see like what happens if you shake this up a little bit. And then, like, man, they just completely blossomed in all these ways that I don't even think they knew were possible.
But it's because of your guidance, too, because for me, it's my first experience working with a producer, and I didn't know what to expect, but this guy really extracts from you the best.
Yeah, it sounds like a cliche thing to say, but oh my God, it's
so true. Well, it's because he's a musician too.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah. When he plays back, it's like, is that me playing that?
Yeah. But it's also kind of like an art form and communication too, I feel.
Yeah.
It's like a way of making you feel comfortable that...
And also a special way to communicate what he wants from you. Mm-hmm. Or like the state of mind that you should be in order to play and perform and do the best you can, and it's been really a kind blessing.
Of like a safe environment too.
Yeah.
Kind of like I can say that I don't think any of us were at one moment nervous.
Yeah.
Recording or doing very challenging things that you put us to do. So it's kind of like a
that's crazy too, because we really did go. We went to like intentionally. Uncomfortable is not the right word, but not their normal place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, out of our comfort zone.
Out of your comfort zone.
Yeah. A lot of that.
Yeah, Lawson is great at like making people see the value of going outside your comfort zone, even if you don't understand what you're doing
right
at the beginning. But then when you listen back to it, I just heard, like, just like in the past few weeks, I've been hearing the things they've been doing. And like the things that Lawson and Nora work together on the cuatro, it's like amazing. It feels like a whole new direction or new evolution of like cuatro playing. I'm not.
I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. Like, I've never heard a cuatro sound like that before. So, and I guess, I don't know, you guys are onto something new and it's in the record, so.
I mean, as soon as he plays the microphones and I play it, I'm like, what? Is everyone sounding like this because of these microphones? And yeah, it was a revelation for us. And also, it's been for Lawson a Puerto Rican cultural immersion.
Oh my gosh.
We took him to Puerto Rico and and now he's...
He played Santur Cesle with us.
That was a turning, really? That was a turning point for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When did you go?
March. March?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
So we had started, you know, and we're in it, but it was, honestly, that the flight back from Puerto Rico was when I was just like, write pages of like ideas and structure and crazy thoughts, and then we really like started rolling after that. So it's been a real
and emergency. There's life before Panso Wow and after Panso Wow.
Exactly.
Yeah. Panso Wow has been a huge incentive.
I think that actually probably should be the name of the album.
I like it. Panso Wow.
It would be fun with me.
That can be the name of the EP, Panso Wow EP.
Panso Wow. Yeah, we...
I like the life after Panso Wow. Yeah. It's been a life-changing experience for Lawson. And now he's an expert in different kinds of Panso Wow.
Yeah, he's had Panso Wow from Monchopan, from Genesis,
from El Barrio here that's baked in Connecticut. Yeah. All of those.
They're on the lookout for it.
Yes. It's not,
I understand, Lawson. It's so good.
No, it was just like, oh, we're going to have this sandwich. Oh, you were not going to believe it. It's the most amazing. It's my favorite thing. I was like, oh, great. Puerto Rican food. I'm like, I love food. And I love new food. And I love, like, hearty food that really, like, sums up the people of the place.
Yep.
Whether it's just a little town, you know, outside, you know, nothing dramatic or another country or whatever. So this is like, you know, expectations were high. And maybe the first thing that I ate, it was like, we're going to go have this, you know, really Puerto Rican. And it was like, bread with cheese and egg, and I was like, guys, I've had that like all my life. This is what I came here to eat, you know. And then I was like, okay, you know, cool. And you know, bite number one, and I was totally in love, and my life was the beginning of life after Panso Wow, for sure.
I understand.
Yeah.
I totally understand. That's actually my favorite thing to have breakfast in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Then okay, eat like usually because of where I live, I go to La Panadería Iberia, la que está por la Rumbe.
Ah, sí, I know that one.
Los Robles.
Los Robles.
Because I love the pan sobao or the pan de agua toast with a lot of butter.
Oh, I don't do breakfast here, but when I go to Puerto Rico, I'm like, breakfast.
Yeah, when we go to Puerto Rico,
it's a thing.
Every day is a must.
Avena, oatmeal, and coffee. That's my breakfast every day when I go home.
Yeah.
I do say.
It's like the best thing ever. I don't get tired of it.
My papa some de coupe, and it's like, it doesn't matter if we wake up like at 11, we're not having lunch, we're having desayuno de mucho pan.
Oh really?
So good.
Oh my goodness,
qué lindo.
Okay, I'm hungry now.
Yeah,
I can't find that.
Have you heard much of this album?
Well, I heard what you sent to me, but they were like pequeños, no? Wasn't all together?
Did you send the thing from
the link?
I don't know.
It had five songs in it.
Yeah, works in progress. But it's the full songs.
Okay. Yeah. I'm curious. I mean, it would be great to get, like, I'd love to interview you about it. Because, like, just, I wasn't kidding about what I said. Like, it's, you know, as big of a deal as the making is the, you know, that's the rest of the equation. And one doesn't work unless the other works. Meaning, like, you make this great album, and then it's like, oh, we have a great album, big deal. Like, there's got to be a way to connect with people that it's valuable to and that will love it. And I think, I fully, fully believe that this is an album that will ignite something. I think it's going to be, I think there'll be a real, real audience for it. Which scares the shit out of me. Because, you know what I mean? Like, there's so much pressure on this next part to me. Or responsibility is a better word, not pressure. I don't feel pressure from them. But I think we all, I don't know if they feel this way as much as I do. But just about the responsibility of, you know, knowing what we have. And knowing what's possible. And hearing the other records that we're fans of, that I think this is, you know, if people like, well, you know, this is, it's a really good record. So it'd be great to know what you thought of, like, okay, you know, how do you get to this? How do you get to the
audience? Well, I thought it was really pretty. I have to go back and review because I didn't get the cuatro. I was just like in the ambiance music, just, you know,
yeah,
it's very like groovy, kind of, you know, smoke a joint and just be like chilling.
Right.
I mean, that's what I did.
Yeah,
you know, just kind of like,
yeah,
it, so I, you know, like it was very como relaxing, you know. I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. Pero tengo que entonces como go to another layer to then find this cuadro.
Yeah, find these details.
Right, and we're also still working on the mix and all those.
And
so, we'll likely change. There's a lot of tipless.
Yeah.
It's a, I was listening to it today, and there's this song, Ascenso, you do like an effect on the tiple.
Oh, yeah.
It's so cool, because I was like, I realized today that it was a tiple. Before that, I was like, oh, that's like, I didn't know Jose, how did Jose make that sound?
Yeah.
I thought it was like an electronic thing. And then today I was like, oh, I think that's the thing that slide. Mira does, the slide in the
tiple. I mean, in a way, that's a cool, I almost think that was a compliment. I mean, the mix is not, it's not mixed yet, really, but you know, it's a pretty incredibly rich, it's an incredibly rich fabric of these things, but like putting tiple and cuatro in the middle of like, you know, tons of electronics, it could sound like, you know, like one thing doesn't belong. Like it's this, these acoustic instruments stuck on top of the electronics.
It doesn't have that. It doesn't have that. I didn't perceive it like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If anything, what you're saying is it's really in there and not sticking out.
Yeah. Era como una. I felt that it was integrated.
Yeah.
Right, that's good.
That's cool too.
And definitely, you know, very distinct of you. I felt like.
What do you mean?
Like voice? When I've seen you perform 3 times, and every time I go, I know that I'm listening. That I know that it's you. Like I know that I could be somewhere and something plays, and I'm gonna be like, "Ah, mira, soy Angelica."
Oh, that's it.
Oh.
Gracias.
That's kind of a journey.
Yeah, well, it'd be great to get your feedback about it. I mean, we'll send you the updated. I think we've updated that again, so you should maybe check. As we have new things, we'll, you know, feed them and populate them into that link and that site.
Yeah. I'm going to get the.
Yeah, how's best to do this? Dropbox it to you, or do you can get
Dropbox.
To you?
Dropbox.
Okay. Cool.
I should give you my email for Dropbox.
Yep.
Thank you for listening. Follow Notes from a Native Daughter on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.